The Guardian.
The Guardian has partnered with audible.co.uk to offer listeners a free audiobook when you sign up for a one-month, no-commitment trial of the Audible service. Audible has over 50,000 audiobook titles available to download. Go to guardian.co.uk/audible for further details.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Today, Russian Putin election controversy as Chelsea boss elects to axe Villas Boas and put in Roberto Di Matteo, who's even less popular. Can RDM really do more, or will he be a really disastrous manager? The pod puts out an APB on ABB's long-term replacement, then moves on to Spurs Man United. Proof that goals aren't overrated, and are quite handy, actually. And hungry like the Wolves, goals on Fulham. It's the big clash at Craven Cottage. There's Spain, Rome derby, the return of Robbie Fowler, and Arsenal Milan. After that Anfield win, can they turn around a 4-0 Champions League deficit? We discuss that and more in today's Football Weekly. Yeah, hi everybody, and welcome to what should be a bumper show. Here joining us today, it's welcome back Michael Han.
Hello, James.
Hi, but you're not solo. We've got in Greg Wright, that's Han Solo.
Yeah, that's really good. It must be about 32 years since I've heard that joke, James, but you know, you've brought it back into fashion.
Yep. Okay, Greg Ruffley. I say Greg Ruffley, but I'm wrong, aren't I, Greg?
No, you're still right.
I'm still right.
Still
okay.
Greg Ruffley, yeah.
All right, and Barry Glendinning.
I'm still Barry Glendinning.
You are still Barry Glendinning, but you're back in the pod.
Yes.
Crikey.
And it's great to be back. I've been away. I had to take some time off. Ooh. Because I've just holidays.
Oh, I see.
Use them or lose them.
Right.
And I've come back and there's no paper cups in the pod. We've now got mugs with pigs on them and little G Guardian insignias.
Mm.
Can I just say, I visited Barry on holiday as well.
Did you?
Yeah, his holiday choice was his local pub.
Right.
And Barry's got his own little stool there, like Norm from Cheers.
I have my own little stool.
You do have your own little stool on the corner of the bar, like Norm from Cheers. Everybody knows your name.
That's Jim the Carpenter's stool.
Is it? Yeah. Or are you just keeping it warm for him?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm. My local pub, there's a lot of Jims and a lot of Martins, so they all have a qualifier. There's Jim the Carpenter, Jim right. the Rat Catcher, Drunk Jim.
Right. And who have you got him pegged as in Cheers?
Oh, definitely Norm.
Norm.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
So that would make you Cliffy Clavin then?
Yeah. Come on.
Yeah. Well, I love it.
Low sense of gravity like Norm, haven't you, buddy?
I don't think I am Fraser, no. Okay, I'm moving on to the football now. Now that we've done all that chat stuff. And, oh, good Lord, Andre Villas-Boas has gone. Hey, somebody posted a link to an extraordinary website. It was called HasAndreVillas-Boas BeenSackedYet.com. Have you seen this? All it consisted of was a giant page saying, in big Hollywood writing, Has Andre Villas-Boas been sacked yet? And it had the word no for 257 days, and then yesterday they updated it to yes. That's magnificent.
It's like DeadOrAlive.com.
Oh, I've not seen DeadOrAlive.
Yeah, well, if you want to know if someone's dead or alive, you just put the name in and it comes up yes or no in big writing.
Oh, okay.
The manager equivalent.
March of Science. Good stuff. Anyway, there you go. It was kind of coming a little bit, this, but the final nail in the coffin was the defeat against West Brom, a defeat in which he even used the veterans, and they let him down, Barry.
They did let him down. Actually, it's interesting. I was watching one of the games yesterday with a West Brom supporting pal of mine, Damon, and he's become very aggrieved that being beaten by West Brom seems to be the last word in humiliation that signals the exit of managers, because it's Mick McCarthy and now Andre Villas-Boas. But I don't think anyone's particularly surprised he's gone. He came with a mandate to put a project in place. Wasn't really given the chance to do it, but his results haven't been good enough, and he has the lowest winning percentage of any Chelsea manager since Glenn Hoddle.
That speaks volumes.
Yes.
The great Barry Sanders posted in, and says the story of this game was Chelsea midfield three of Ramirez, Essien and Lampard being comprehensively outplayed by the less illustrious group of Morrison, Andrews and Malumbu, although we should all know by now Malumbu is better than Kakar. So, yeah, well done, West Brom, although it's going to be lost in all of this, isn't it? Because everyone's going to be talking about Chelsea looking for their eighth manager in 8 years, the £64 million they paid out in compensation to the various ones they've binned in the meantime, and whether he's going to be staying around there long or heading off to Inter, all these questions. And who's next, of course? Now, Roberto Di Matteo, has come in for the cup tie against Birmingham, which is what, this midweek, is it, Greg?
Yeah, it's Wednesday, I think.
Apparently, he's even less popular with the players than AVB was. Is that right?
Well, so it's said in the Sun today that apparently he's very cocksure and a bit too full of himself. The players don't like him. But the players seem to rule Stamford Bridge, so it's a surprise that, you know, one of them wasn't given the job, really.
Right. Well, a lot of people posting that very suggestion. Beloved aunt, here's one example. Chelsea should save themselves time and effort by appointing Terry as player manager, or a triumvirate of Terry, Lampard and Drogba. As rich as Crassus, idolised for their triumphs like Pompey, they have the arrogance of Caesar. It'd end with them knifing each other in the back in the shadow of Osgood's statue. Probably would, actually.
Very poetic.
Yeah, like, that's nice.
I think what people are missing in the whole thing is, of course, that Chelsea's season was completely derailed by QPR. It's a thing QPR can take credit for.
Right.
The wheels came off after that 1-0 loss at Loftus Road and the whole John Terry imbroglio. But my favourite thing on Saturday was actually AVB's post-match interview, the one where he admitted that Chelsea were inferior in every single aspect of the game. That was a man who knew he was getting sacked in the morning, wasn't it?
The jig was up there, didn't he?
And apparently he spent Saturday night sleeping in the training ground. James Darroch likened it this morning to Alan Partridge driving to Dundee in his bare feet eating a Toblerone. I have this image of André Villas-Boas curled up in a room full of little triangular cone things wrapped in a goal net, sucking his thumb and crying.
A golden handshake, more like. £11 million apparently awaits the young Portuguese manager, or at least a slice of that until he takes his next job. So, as you pointed out before, one Whitfield, two, sorry about him. Roberto Di Matteo, though, interesting choice, not just for the various allegations about how well or not he gets on with the players, but he's a man, after all, who was sacked by West Brom themselves midway through last season for not being good enough. So it's an interesting upgrade.
Well, they're still in the Champions League as well, and to trust... I mean, I could understand if it was all over for them and they didn't have a chance of finishing fourth and they weren't going to be still playing in Europe. But, I mean, to kind of trust the job to somebody with his lack of experience seems a very daft choice. And like you said, with the players, they didn't particularly like Villas-Boas. They don't like Di Matteo, and Di Matteo hasn't got any, you know, the kind of coaching experience of winning things like Villas-Boas. It seems an odd choice to give him the job. I mean, maybe Abramovich should just give it himself, you know. Put himself in the dugout and see what it's like down there. Because, I mean, anybody else he gets in, he's probably going to sack after 7 months anyway, and the cycle will just keep going on.
Well, so I think that's a bit unfair on Di Matteo, well, I mean, whether he's liked or not, because his problem at West Brom wasn't that he was a terrible coach or a terrible manager, it's he didn't have players good enough to play the expansive means of football that he wanted to play in the Premier League. And he sort of does at Chelsea, in a kind of aged, slightly decrepit, slightly slow version. And if we're working on the assumption that his job is just to keep things going until they bring in who they want, well, seems fair enough to me.
Producer Ben, by the way, Greg wants to interject that Roberto Di Matteo has won something. He got MK Dons promoted. Plus, he's managed a successful chain of chip shops.
He got West Brom promoted as well. Let's not forget that.
Yeah, there you go. That's two things. Chip shops.
I mean, Chelsea could employ Mick McCarthy if that was the case, couldn't he? He got Wolves promoted.
You know he has been linked.
Oh, has he? Yeah. Oh, I thought so, yeah.
He doesn't want a stopgap job. He wants the full 18 months, though, I think. So we'll talk to Sid Lowe later on, because, of course, two of the names in the frame are this Pep Guardiola fellow and Jose Mourinho. But I don't know about that. Sid will have a view on that later on. I don't know if you've heard anything. You were doing rumour mill today, weren't you, Barry?
Yeah, well, I checked the betting odds for the manager in the absence of Sean Ingle, and Rafa Benitez and Jose Mourinho are joint favourites. And then you've Pep Guardiola, Di Matteo also, and David Moyes is the only other candidate in single figures. I think he's about 9-1. But they reckon he possibly won't be trendy enough. He's too Scottish and dour to manage Chelsea, maybe.
Right.
I think whoever the next manager is, whoever they bring in, they could maybe do something that Villas-Boas hasn't, and maybe bring in a bigger coaching staff around them to maybe strengthen the position a bit more. Because I think there's two people went with Villas-Boas, and usually you get like a horde of people going out at the same time. And maybe if he'd have had more people on his side and more people to get his message across to the players, then perhaps he could have, maybe strengthened his position there.
But, yeah. Well, it's all water under the Stamford Bridge now. He said that's a little bit of poetry from me.
Michael,
interestingly, Abramovich is supposed to have locked all the players in a room yesterday after dismissing Villas-Boas and told them it's all their fault that he'd been fired. So why does the buck always stop with the manager? Why doesn't the buck stop with, say, Bruce Buck or Ron Gourlay, the, you know, Abramovich's lieutenants or his technical director or whatever?
Well, but what are you going to do? Is sack executives because the players aren't listening to the manager?
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't work that way, though, does it, ever?
All right, then. In more Chelsea news, two of their bright young stars from their youth team have been suspended for letting off a smoke bomb in the dressing room. It's hardly the time for that kind of thing, is it? In other Chelsea news, they have a youth team player called Naughty, and his first name is Naughty. So he's actually called Naughty Naughty. That's superb. When's he going to make the first team? That's what we want to know. Anyway.
Is he a bad boy?
I don't know. I mean, nominative determinism would suggest, but...
They've all rolled up for air rifle classes with Ashley Cole.
Yeah. In other nominative determinism news, I probably shouldn't mention this point, but the beloved aren't posting it again, saying, when you're a professional footballer called Milan Milanovic and you're sitting on the Palermo bench for a game against Milan, you're doing it wrong. That's a fair shout. Thanks, beloved aunt. Anyway, that's enough for part one. Coming up after this, much more. Part two, then, Spurs Man United. Hey, some people are saying Spurs were mugged here, but was this result actually fair enough?
I was reading today that it was a right royal mugging and Spurs should have won the game easily. It's not the game I saw.
Not when they defend like that, eh, Barry?
No, they were pretty poor, and the results haven't been great since Redknapp's acquittal, and he obviously went out and hammered Newcastle, and we thought, oh yes, they'll sweep all before him for the rest of the season. But since then, they've drawn with Stevenage, lost to Arsenal, lost heavily, and lost to United. But United were quite ruthless yesterday. I think they only had 6 shots on goal, 5 of them were on target, and 3 went in.
Hmm.
And say the marking for their opener was appalling.
Second was pretty ropey too,
yeah,
didn't it?
So
I had that Ashley Young goal for the third. Woof.
Yeah, and David De Gea further sort of rescued his reputation by pulling off a splendid save from Jake Livermore.
There you go. And Man United are at home to Athletic Bilbao in the Europa League, of course, on Thursday. Hmm?
Hmm?
It was a bit narrow, the second leg against Ajax, but, you know.
Well, they've been stodgy in Europe all year, haven't they? So, I mean, they're just focused on the league now, I think. Before the Spurs match, they were banging their drum about how psychologically they've got the number over Man City, and this match kind of proved that they're right. You know, they don't have to have much possession and they can still score 3 goals away from home against Spurs. So.
All right, well, it still stays tight at the top with Man City there with their victory over Bolton, Barry.
Well, there seemed to be some controversy over whether or not Emmanuel Adebayor's sort of backflip goal should have been allowed or not, but it was quite clearly a handball.
I thought it was handball.
He controlled the ball with his hand.
His hand came down towards the ball as well. I mean, people were saying, oh, it wasn't deliberate. I think you got an argument that it was deliberate there, at the very least.
I mean, it was massively influential anyway.
If he hadn't used his hand, he wouldn't have been able to control the ball and score.
If he just got out the way, it would have gone in anyway, wouldn't it? So maybe he should have concentrated on doing that.
Plus, even if they'd scored, United would have won 3-2. So.
Yeah. But,
and that's how football works.
When I've been in this pod before, people have talked about Man City's lack of depth, but an actual lack of depth there, I think you saw with Spurs. I mean, their midfield was nowhere near enough to create what they needed against Man United. Lack of depth now does translate as can't field 2 teams good enough to win the Champions League. But, I mean, Spurs, that wasn't enough. Without Bale, they looked lacking in pace.
Yes. Now, it all leaves Spurs just 4 points. 4 slender points ahead of Arsenal. Remember when Arsenal were in crisis? It was long ago now, eh? There they are, moving in on 3rd spot, and they've become the first visiting team to win at Anfield, Greg.
Yeah, they've got a decent lad up front called Robin Van Persie, I believe, in there. Yeah.
Well, he said we nicked it.
Anybody looking at that game who hadn't seen Liverpool in any other match this season would have thought exactly the same, but I think it's got to the stage now where, with Liverpool, you can no longer say that they're being unlucky in every game, that they don't score one of many chances that they create, and, you know, they hit the post a number of times again. And it's been a tale of the season that they've not converted possession and chances into...
Or penalties.
Into wins. Oh, yeah, or penalties as well.
Great save by Chesney.
Yeah, it was. He had a great game, Chesney, yeah. I think with Liverpool, they've got to... You know, you look at them, and if you were going out on a date, say, for instance, and you say you went out on 20 dates and you never got a call back once, you take a look in the mirror and you think, you know, maybe I should change this Cabrini shirt that I'm wearing here, right, and these Moto jeans, you know, this look isn't doing it for me. The problem is, if you've already
on the night of each date.
No.
Right.
No, it's, you know.
That's the thing about Liverpool, that they can't put it away. Uncomfortable date to be with, no?
Who the Cabrini jeans of the Liverpool team is? Sorry, the Moto jeans of the Liverpool team is in this extended metaphor.
Well yeah, the extended metaphor, which isn't going far, is maybe I'm saying, if you've already got £35 million of credit card debt on clothing, which is on the bench in Andy Carroll, then you probably need to spend money, but you need to wait until the summer to do so. If you basically, what I'm saying is, they bought Andy Carroll, he's not worked out, and they need goals. They still need a number nine. Suarez isn't a number nine. He's an auxiliary forward, a very good one, but he isn't a goal scorer. He twists and turns to get into positions, which he's off balance in when he gets to them, and doesn't score as many goals as he could do.
All right, and Van Persie is a goal scorer. In fact, he scored two more goals on his own than Wigan have put together.
It's a privilege watching him, actually, at the moment. It reminds me of when Thierry Henry was at his peak, and thinking, I'm lucky to be living in an age where I can see this man doing these extraordinary things on television every week. That's my tribute to Robin Van Persie.
Yeah, maybe we should give his second goal a bit of love. It was fantastic.
It wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, he took his eye off the ball and looked where Reina was as it was coming, which to do that is quite extraordinary, and still finish it like he did.
And it was a beautiful delivery from Alex Song as well. He's done that before. They scored a near identical goal, possibly a better finish.
Who was it against, Barry?
I think it was against Everton.
All right, then. Now, we're lucky to be living in an age where we can watch Van Persie try and score goals, some four perhaps of them, this Tuesday night on television, as Arsenal take on Milan in the Champions League. They do need four goals to bring it level after their humiliating game, to quote Arsene Wenger at the San Siro. They are facing a Milan team that is top of Serie A, 3 points clear now after a big 4-0 win at Palermo at the weekend, featuring three goals and very nearly a fourth from Zlatan Ibrahimovic, who was in outstanding form, arguably as good as Van Persie, this weekend. What do you think on Arsenal's chances?
I think they're very slim.
Ooh.
They need to score a minimum of four goals and not concede.
Yes.
And it's very difficult to look at that Milan lineup and see them not scoring despite their Italian origins. And Arsenal have to decide, you know, do they go all-out attack from the get-go and risk leaving holes at the back? Well, it's possible, but it's so unlikely, as I certainly wouldn't bet on it.
They have scored 11 goals in their last two home games, Arsenal, haven't they? Between Spurs and what was the one before that?
Yeah, but it's Blackburn, difficult to imagine Milan defence being as porous as that Spurs defence.
Yeah. I don't think Milan are going to be pouring forward in great numbers, are they?
You think they'll curb their attacking instincts? Well, they are quite an attacking side, Milan.
They are quite an attacking side, but when you're 4-0 up from the first leg, you don't think we better score two or three early to make sure of this, do you?
Well, you might not do, that's fair. The second, I think it was, of the Milan goals was a classic counter-attacking move, worryingly enough for Arsenal. It was a quick ball out, then somebody punted it upfield. I think Rubinho got hold of it and put it through to Ibrahimovic, and bang.
Haven't Milan surrendered a lead like this before?
Yes, they have.
Deportivo La Coruña?
Indeed, 2003-2004 it was.
It's not without historic precedent,
well, the only
but
thing
it's
was
incredibly
that was 4-1, and then it was 4-0 in the second leg to Deportivo. So... yeah, more or less the same.
And there is a similar example from the mid-70s, QPR against Slovan Bratislava.
Ooh.
Won 5-1 at Loftus Road, lost 4-0 away and went out on away goals.
No.
Mm.
Oh, dear. It's also true that Milan have gone out at this point of the Champions League in the last four seasons, I think.
God, I'm getting increasingly confident about Arsenal's chances now.
There you go. This,
unlucky for them. I think if they had scored at the San Siro, I would give them a sporting chance, but considering they're just one goal away from needing to score six, then it's not going to happen, is it?
Well, they've scored six before now, but yeah, it'll be interesting to watch them try.
Yeah,
yeah, lovely. The other Champions League fixtures this week are Apple Nicosia hosting Olympique Lyon, who have a 1-0 lead from the game at the Stade Gelland. And Bayer Leverkusen taking on FC Barcelona. That'll be in Barcelona. Barcelona 3-1 up from the game in Germany. And also Benfica host Zenit St. Petersburg, who won 3-2 in Russia. Good. Right, now back to the Premier League. Tyne-Wear Derby. A 1-1 rock'em sock'em roller coaster of blood, thunder and much more. Barry Glendinning.
I think the highlights package made it look a lot better than it actually was. Watched the highlight package. I watched the whole thing. Oh. And nasty, lots of needle, as you'd expect in a game of that nature. Lee Cattermole pulled off the impressive feat of getting booked in the opening minute, managing to last, to defy all expectation by lasting till the final whistle, and then getting sent off on his way off the pitch into the tunnel.
Bright young thing Michael Cox asks, is this the biggest gap between two cards in a 90-minute game ever?
I would imagine it almost certainly is, because it was, what, 94, 95 minutes or more, actually, probably near 100 minutes. But yeah, he got his second yellow card for foul and abusive language against the referee, Mike Dean. He basically called him an effing P. But there was, it's a weird one, actually, because there was a suggestion by some Sunderland representatives that the Newcastle coaching team had gone into the ref's room at half-time and given out about the decisions that weren't going their way. And Newcastle have denied this, said none of our staff entered the referee's room, so possibly they stood at the door and shouted inside. But, you know...
You thought things went Newcastle's way in the second half, do you?
I thought so. I mean, I think a draw was probably a fair result, but Cheick Tiote should have been sent off and could easily have been sent off.
It was a hellish game to referee, though. I mean, Mike Dean did see some criticism, but it must have been...
I thought he did okay. Yeah. I mean, Stefan Sessegnon got sent off for raising his hands to Tiote. He hit him in the chest. Tiote went down, like dropped about 5 seconds later. Big delayed reaction, holding his face.
Tiote was disgusting.
Rolled around like a big girl. And, you know, didn't do himself any favour. I would be embarrassed to do that if I was a player, but some players obviously aren't.
They should bring in retrospective punishment for simulation for things like that. If it's simulated, if you get a yellow card for diving in the box, okay, the referee hasn't seen the initial incident and doesn't know that there is no contact and he's faking it, but the FA should be able to go back and discipline these players who do that, who fake to get people sent off.
Should they discipline Alan Pardew for trying to... Get up in
Martin O'Neill's grill.
Yeah, well, I thought that was quite saucy, that bit.
Oh, yes, but they're just passionate men, as he explained. They're passionate men, and it'll be forgotten after the game.
Right.
Well, it wasn't forgotten by O'Neill, because O'Neill refused to have a drink with Pardew afterwards. And,
yeah, that might have just been Alan Pardew's monotone. He's thinking, do I really want to spend an hour in a room with this voice?
Yeah, well...
All fair points.
But I think Sunderland were the only team that tried to play football in that game.
Were they?
What team do you support, Barry?
Sunderland.
Okay.
Yeah. But no, I'm not complaining about the result. It was unfortunate that they conceded a very late equaliser.
Unfortunate
having
for them.
Defended so
Nicholas
stoutly.
Nicholas Bentner, the comeback starts here.
Yeah, he scored a good penalty. There was a lot of pressure on
him. He scored a penalty. I was watching the highlights last night with my friend who thinks Bentner is terrific. And as Bentner ran up and the commentator said, Nicholas Bentner hasn't exactly set the world alight this season. The ball went in. My friend turned to me and said, and now he has. No, he hasn't.
Well, I fully expected him to miss that penalty. I had my head in my hands when he stepped up to take it. But he has this nice plastic Zorro mask holding his head together, which maybe is keeping his brain.
Is the mask the thing that stops him going out and vandalising cars?
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
It's like a horse wearing blinkers, I think. It just keeps him going straight throughout the match. He doesn't get persuaded to go anywhere else with anything else.
Now, we're going somewhere else now, to Craven Cottage, Greg, to talk about what's quite possibly the best Fulham team ever. Oof. Hey, I threw that one out there. I mean, in my short memory, I can't think of a better Fulham team than this.
The one that got to the UEFA?
No, this is better than that.
Oh, come on.
They've still got Clint Dempsey, and now they've got Pavel Podgorybniak.
They used to have George Best, Bobby Moore and Rodney Marsh.
Yeah.
How can that not be the best team ever?
But that wasn't...
And they achieved success... Oh, no, sorry.
And they what? They achieved success, yeah. No, but this is clearly an extraordinary outfit. And I like the kind of the Russian, the Soviet-US angle they've got going on up front. Don't you?
It's like the Cold War, except it's like the end
hands
of the Cold
the,
War.
The Iron Curtain.
They brought it together, and instead of disarming, they've armed Fulham.
Exactly.
Something. This is getting a bit tortuous, isn't it?
No, and the common enemy is Wolves.
I thought Pogreniak last week at Loftus Road was excellent. All it wasn't much of a surprise to see him do so well against a team perhaps even more abject than QPR this week. But Wolves were terrible. I think this season we could see a team stay up with 30 points. Mm. I think it is that dreadful at the bottom of the division.
Wow, okay. How many points are they all on now?
22. 3 on 22 and 2 on 20.
Wow.
Pog as well. I can't pronounce his name.
Pavel Pogreniak?
Yeah, him. He scored 1 in 16 for Stuttgart before Yol decided to buy him. And bought him for $3 million. And then, so I looked on Soccerbase. This is the kind of, you know, depth of my research I went to today to see if he'd had an extraordinary game against Hamburg when he was there, and he'd never played against Hamburg, so I've no idea whether Yol just liked the cut of his jib and thought he was, you know, 6'1", big, strong.
You might have remembered him from his Zenit.
Zenit, he was very good, yeah, but at Stuttgart it just didn't happen for him. So I mean, he's taken a punt on him, and it's so far it's coming good.
He's telling you what, Craig,
perfect hat-trick as well, left foot, right foot head.
There you go. What are the odds on Fulham finishing above Liverpool this season? They're just 3 points behind at the moment.
I don't know. Barry could probably tell me. Sean would definitely be able to tell you. There's a man who knows his
odds. I don't really care about the odds.
No,
I know. Yeah.
I'm sure Liverpool will finish against Fulham.
Above Fulham?
Yeah, I'm sure they'll finish above Fulham.
You're sure about that?
Yeah.
Okay. You're tempted by that, aren't you, Barry?
No, I'm not.
Oh, okay.
No.
Curses. Mamadou Diarra, he's be interesting to see, you know. That's another player who's not been in form that Fulham have decided they could punt on. Imagine if he came good, the former Real Madrid midfielder.
And I mean, Dembele's been brilliant for Fulham this season. He's the class act there. I think you know, when somebody gets the ball and they pull away in one touch, and they don't seem to have to dally on it at all. It's just all one fluid movement. He's got that kind of movement in midfield.
Having said that, after this extended period of Fulham love, they were. Well, only playing QPR last time and only Wolves this time, so we should perhaps temper that. Let's move on to QPR. Time to talk to the hand, actually, because you were at Loftus Road on the weekend and you mentioned the extraordinary situation there in the bottom. Five teams within 2 points still. You've got QPR and Blackburn and Wolves all on 22, Wolves in the bottom three, and then below Wolves, Bolton and Wigan on 20. Now, Loftus Road this weekend, Everton, the visitors. And QPR, did they deserve more, Michael, do you think?
They didn't deserve more because they never really looked like finishing. Oh. I mean, a theme among QPR fans has been the bad luck this season. You don't get bad luck over that many games. You get poor finishing over that many games.
Right, Phillips? Wrong, Phillips.
Oh, Sean. Mm. Oh, we were so optimistic when he came. He could run quickly. But that's all he does. That's all he does. It's a shame.
Adil Terabt, 59 shots, no goals, although he did set up one.
Terabt is... People keep drawing out the statistics about Terabt and saying he's failed in the Premier League. In fact, he's the only player at Loftus Road with any kind of imagination or creativity. Oh. He's the only one who looks like he's going to set up goals. To be fair, a load of players have missed sitters that he's laid on for them. But on paper, this is the best QPR team probably since Les Ferdinand left. But they're going to have to relay the pitch with paper because they can't do it on grass, I'm afraid. But and the QPR run-in is horrific. I've been looking at all the run-ins this weekend, and QPR's is the hardest. The other day, I went through all QPR's remaining games, thinking what the team could do if the players played to the best of the ability. I thought 16 points was possible. Then I went through marking what I thought they actually would get, and it was 2 points, starting with a home draw against
Everton.
You think
Everton, 2 points?
And they fulfilled my prediction.
So one more point this season?
Bolton away on Saturday. I think it's perfectly conceivable that QPR could lose the rest of the games. We'll see. I pray, but I'm looking, so I'm looking on the
Liverpool,
dark side.
Sunderland, Arsenal, United, Swansea, West Brom, Spurs, Chelsea, Stoke, Man City away last day of the season. They'd probably be gone by then.
We'll see, Barry.
Just thinking, actually, you know the way you said talk to the hand?
Oh, yeah.
What we should have done is get a particular member of the A team in here who would have no interest in what was going on, so that we could talk to the hand because the face ain't listening.
All right. Or we could quote an old Enter the Dragon line and say, "Bullshit, Mr. Hare, man. You ain't nothing." Was it? You come straight out of a comic book.
I'm glad my name causes such amusement.
Right. Okay.
That's what I'm here for.
It is. Producer Ben names that quote. Wow. Black Belt Jones, was it? Bullshit, Mr. Hammond. You come in straight out of a comic book. Great line. Bottom of the pile, and significantly worse, well, actually 2 points worse than QPR, who are out of the drop zone at the moment, Wigan, who lost to Swansea, featuring your favourite player, Gylfi Sigurdsson.
Who was superb.
There you go.
He scored two beauties, right, and tried his damnedest to set up several others, but poor finishing and good goalkeeping by El Habsi sort of repelled the Swansea hordes, but... yeah, Wigan looked in big trouble. And Dave Whelan is not happy with Roberto Martinez. First signs of grumbling. He wanted to know why his three best players weren't picked. And apparently the reason is because a lot of them didn't get back from international duty till late on Friday night.
Mm. Did Roberto Martinez make the point, however, Dave, in previous seasons you've made the point of selling the best players in the Wigan team out from under me?
Also, Dave Whelan would have known those players were on international duty if he wasn't on international duty himself in the Bahamas on holiday.
Yeah. I think it was Barbados, actually.
Oh, yeah, Barbados.
Yeah. I mean, but somewhere nice. Sunny.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, that's the thing with QPR, for all the difficult running, you've got teams around you and indeed below you that look equally capable of really messing things up.
Yeah, the thing is, there are some, what the pundits like to call, six-pointers in there, and QPR haven't got any of the six-pointers. And the results of those games are going to be the ones that actually drag people clear. You know, like Wolves-Wigan on the last day, that could end up being crucial.
Right.
Blackburn v Wolves next weekend. Sadly, we've just got the big teams.
Right. On that dispiriting note for Ars fans, actually, Michael, you know, whenever you go to Loftus Road, you come back with some saucy little tidbit from what you heard from your position just above the manager's dugout.
My favourite thing this week was QPR had an appeal for a penalty. That didn't look like much to me, but Mark Hughes was shouting down to the linesman, "Oh, Lino, wasn't that a penalty?" Linesman, "I've got no idea." Q shouts in the crowd, "What else have you got no idea about then, mate?"
Lovely stuff. Real football. Magnificent. All right, that's it for part two. We'll be back with more, including Robbie Fowler, after this. Yes, that's right. The Robbie Fowler. And where's he turned up now, Greg?
He's popped up at Blackpool. Yeah, he's gone training with Blackpool.
Blackpool?
Yeah, by the seaside. And he's 36 years old, Robbie Fowler. And I looked at this before and I thought, well, if he formed a strike partnership with Kevin Phillips, that would be a pretty old partnership, because
75 years of age.
Well, yeah, I mean, Kevin Phillips is 38. I mean, like, this, I used to look at Kevin Phillips and think he was younger than Fowler, and, like, you know, very similar to him.
We might have miscalculated with that.
That's right, isn't it?
37
next month.
Is 74.
Yeah.
All right, then.
Yeah, Fowler, yeah, he is 37 in a month's time. That's fair enough, isn't it?
Okay, so by then it would be 75. okay, good. He brings experience of Thailand, of Grozny, of North Queensland Fury.
Yeah, race horses. And all right. I mean, he's not played in England since 2008, where he kind of petered out at Blackburn on a pay-as-you-go deal kind of thing. And I've no idea what he's going to be like when he kind of, if he does waddle out there for another game. I mean,
he will quite literally look like a tangerine.
Yeah,
for Blackburn.
I imagine. I mean, it'd be great to see him score another goal, but I mean, he's a player who I'm just so surprised he's still playing, because he never looked like he had all that much kind of enthusiasm for football after he left Liverpool, and I thought he'd have been retired and kind of, you know, running his Macker and Growler racehorse business with McManaman and not really bothering with football anymore. But the fact that he still wants to play is laudable. Whether after the next few days Holloway sees that he's not getting any less rotund, you know, and he does offer him a contract, we'll see, I suppose.
It's a fascinating move.
Yeah, just I used to play with Robbie Fowler's mate Calvi at Marine, the non-league club Marine, some years ago, and his mate Calvi used to turn up in Robbie Fowler's his Audi to kind of, you know, to training and stuff, and he'd always turn up in Robbie Fowler's boots and kit and this, that and the other. And then one time he turned up in Robbie Fowler's Audi and it was totaled. I don't know what the hell he'd done to it, but he'd kind of like completely done in the front of it and scraped the side of it and whatnot. And it was a club car, and I remember all Liverpool players had to turn up in the cars for the matches, and so Fowler had to turn up in this new enough written off Audi for a match against someone at Anfield once. I remember outside the main stand, Fowler's car was there.
Did you play with Jason McAteer, who was at Marine more or less at the same time?
No, he was there a couple of years before us. And we had to sign these contracts called McAteer contracts. And basically it meant Marine would get a minimum of 500 quid for any player that got picked up by a professional club. Because they got 500 quid and a bag of tracksuits off Bolton when McAteer went. And then they flogged him for 4.5 million to Liverpool. So. Great business for Marine, you know.
When were you at Marine, Greg? I spent a glorious season going to Rossett Park a couple of times a month.
I was in the reserves. I wasn't even first team quality when I was like between 16 and 18. You see, what had happened is all the Liverpool and Everton trainees had all come down at the age of 18 and take all the places that we'd had previously, you know. We'd already been released when we were 16, so.
You paid your dues hearing Rolly Howard's window cleaning stories.
Yeah.
All right. Fascinating how small the world is, Michael.
You said that in a way suggesting it was anything other than fascinating.
No, I am amazed. I'm always intrigued by how, you know, paths cross and reconverge. You know, like there's a great big design out there. Like we're a part of a big tapestry. I don't know what it's saying, Barry. Sometimes I think I get glimpses of the pattern.
Right.
In other top football news, Barry, you've looked up the strip club that supposedly Mario Balotelli went to on, what was it, Friday night?
Yeah, he was seen coming out of there at 2:45 on Friday morning.
Oh, okay, so it's Thursday night, Friday morning, right.
Less than 36 hours before a game. Now, there's no suggestion he was drunk because he doesn't drink. It's one vice he doesn't have, which is probably for the best, considering his form as a sober man. But he was in the X in the City strip club, which I thought it might have been one I visited while on the stag do of a certain other pod contributor, not sitting a million miles away, but it turns out it wasn't.
Okay.
But we apparently went to a very low rent one, because this one is Liverpool's number one fantasy lounge, the largest gentleman's club in an excellent location in Liverpool city centre. Our gorgeous girls are sure to never disappoint. Our dancers are trained to the highest standards, and we guarantee you'll have a fantastic night every night.
How much are they paying you, Barry?
X in the City is more than just a lap dancing bar, which is some information the police might be interested in hearing. I don't know what else.
Can I just say, there are lots of Mario's antics, and he's got this admit it or pay big fine ultimatum, though, from Mancini. Mancini's saying something like £250,000, or if you admit it, it'll be less. I think.
Well, he can't really deny it, because there's pictures of him standing on the steps. But
all his antics, there's a certain kind of rascalish flair to a lot of his stuff, a bit of a lovable rogue thing. But it's strip club, is it not a bit, you know, is it not?
Is it not a bit,
it's not a bit tawdry? You're Mario, you hold up your I Love You Raffaella t-shirt one day, next day you're coming out of a strip club. Is it not a bit disappointing?
Mario's life is an attempt to recreate the existence. It's an art project. It's an attempt to recreate the existence of Frank Worthington. The only thing he hasn't got is the moustache, but that will be coming. He's going to grow his hair a bit more, slick it back.
Right.
He is Frank Worthington from New Age.
Lovely. Okay, so yeah, you're all fine with that, good? Okay, I am too. I'm just pretending not to be for, you know, the mixed pod listenership, clearly. Extraordinary. Sid Lowe awaits in Spain.
Hello.
Ah. It's the warm, reassuring voice of Sid Lowe coming to you from Spain. Hi, Sid.
Hi, James. How are you?
I'm very well. You sound a little bit subdued. Are you not off on some big project thing?
You lost your
interviews, didn't you?
I've had a nightmare few days, yeah. To be perfectly honest, the question, how are you, doesn't get a very well thank you today.
Oh.
But anyway, fire away.
Which interviews did you lose, Sid?
Oh, just too many to even begin. Too many and too important to even begin to get into.
Well, listen, in Liga news, of course, Real Madrid and Barcelona both won 5-0 for Real, and a goal for Ricky Kaká. I needed that. He said afterwards. There's now 10 points between Real and Barcelona. There's also 10 points between Bilbao there in fourth place, heading for Champions League football, and Villarreal in 17th on the edge of the relegation trio.
Yeah, this is exactly that closeness that we were talking about a little bit last week, that it's so bunched together that if you take out the top three and the bottom three, as you just said, the entire league is only separated by 10 points. It's been like that for a long, long time now. Week it seems that the team that wasn't doing quite so well wins, and the ones that were apparently doing well don't. I must confess, this statistic is before this weekend, so I don't know if this weekend had altered it, but of the teams of the top half of the table, in other words, from third all the way down to 11th, not one team had won more than 4 out of the last 10 games. No one has been able to put together a really consistent run at all. This weekend, Malaga briefly took the Champions League place on Saturday by beating Getafe. Athletic Bilbao took it off them on Sunday. There were chances last weekend, for example, for Atletico Madrid and various others, Levante as well, Espanyol, who were beaten 5-0 by Real Madrid last night, and Rayo Vallecano, who've got the best of the record now. They're the one team that breaks that run. They've won, I think I'm right in saying, 6 of the last 10 or 5 of the last 10. They're 8, only 3 points off the Champions League place. It's a club with no money that that comes into every season thinking, right, will we survive? Certainly does this time, because it's nearly a decade since they were last in the first division.
Oh, remarkable. Listen, see, just to finish off, of course, a lot of talk post Andre Villas-Boas's departure at Stamford Bridge about who might be taking over, and two of the names that are being repeatedly linked with Chelsea are, of course, Jose Mourinho and Pep Guardiola. Could you give us a quick word on your take on how likely either of those is?
Well, I find it hard to believe. I mean, this is based on nothing more than interpretation. I find it very hard to believe that Pep Guardiola would go to Chelsea. I think Mourinho makes a lot more sense, but of course some of those issues that he had with Abramovich last time will still be there. I think, while of course it's true that Abramovich has made changes with his investment and all the rest of it, he's also part of the problem in terms of the instability of coaches that's been imposed upon the team, and Mourinho knows that. To what they've rebuilt their bridges, as I understand it anyway, they've rebuilt their bridges to some extent, but I don't know to what extent Mourinho will be thinking, I'm just not sure that the promises will be fulfilled in terms of power, authority, control over every aspect of the club. It'd be interesting though, wouldn't it, in a way, to see Mourinho go there and effectively have to put together that generational change by getting rid of the players that he made the key part of his squad in the first place.
Presumably he'd be texting them all the time about how rubbish the new manager is. Sid, many thanks for that. Look forward to catching up with you on Thursday, and best of luck with your digital recovery operation.
Thank you very much.
All right, then, that pretty much wraps things up for today's pod.
Except...
Well, I was going to give a quick mention, because it'd be churlish not to the Rome Derby and a couple of other things from Serie A. The Rome Derby finishing 2-1, Barry, to Lazio. They've won both of them this season. First time since the days of Sven that's happened. And Roma once again got a player sent off. It was the goalie, Stekelenburg, 5 minutes in. I don't deserve this, beep, said Luis Enrique, the manager. But there you go. There's now 10 points between them. Lazio now taking a clear lead over Udinese in the race for Champions League football, the team that won't be in the Champions League, barring some catastrophic collapse by everybody else around them, is Inter, who are currently 11 points off the top three. They drew after, in February, they'd lost all their games and not scored any goals in February. They finally scored some goals and managed to get a point yesterday at home to Catania, but the suggestion still is that Ranieri might be gone even by the end of today. And Villas-Boas, of course, is among those hotly tipped to replace him, which would save Chelsea a packet. But there you go. What else can we tell you?
In the big Portuguese game that Michael Cox was talking about last week, FC Porto beat Benfica 3-2 at Benfica in what sounded like a real thriller. Sorry, I missed it now.
No. Thanks for bringing it up, though, having not seen it, but heard about it from somebody else.
Well, Mr. Cox covered it on his excellent website, Zonal Marking.
So if only he were here.
Yeah. But no, where I live in Brixton, there's lots of Portuguese bars nearby. So
I could
and should have gone to watch it. I just forgot.
Is that because you were drunk and your local sitting on Jim the Carpenter's stool?
No.
Oh, dear. Anyway. This word stool is causing me a lot of problems. The fact of Barry having another man's stool under his own bottom is
One game I did see was Leeds Southampton, which is remarkable in two regards.
Yes.
In that Southampton somehow managed to win 1-0 despite Leeds having about 50,000 shots on target between the woodwork and some desperate goal line clearances.
It's extraordinary, wasn't it? Kelvin Davis turning into the 6-yard box.
Well, yeah, they broke the record for the number of players inside the 6-yard box at any one time, and which I think I make it 17, but some say there's 18 there. The entire Southampton team, and then either 7 or 8 Leeds players.
And this actually broke the record, did it?
Apparently so.
Oh, lovely. Okay.
I don't know what the record
is. Is it like
was
one of those student people in a phone box type thing?
Who would know that that record hasn't been broken in another match?
It, it did look extraordinary, though. Watching it, you would have been moved.
Photographic evidence, which is useful for a podcast.
Anyway.
Yeah.
If this is the any other business section of the pod,
yes.
Can I just say, I just saw this curious little story before I came up about Park Ji-sung and this frog. There's a frog lobby group in Korea who wants him to join their campaign against the consumption of amphibians to benefit health, because they think it doesn't do any good whatsoever.
Why? And, but, why would it do?
Well, apparently Park Ji-sung in his autobiography in 2006 said he used to drink frog's juice because it was supposed to help stamina.
Juice made from boiled frogs.
Yeah, from boiled frogs, because it helps.
Stock? Yeah. Really?
Yeah. Yeah, because, you imagine it was like Bisto or something, kind of, like green packet. And and apparently it helps boost stamina. Now, Park Ji-sung, if you asked anybody what is the one quality above all others that is his best quality, they'd probably say stamina. So why this lobby group would want to ask Park Ji-sung to campaign against it? It's the equivalent of asking Ron Jeremy to campaign against the benefits of Viagra or something.
I have no idea what you're talking about, Greg.
Yeah, well, really? Yeah.
So that's amazing. A, frog juice. B, this movement. Do they have an acronym, a handy acronym?
They are called the Frog Friends Lobby Group. So it's not really the FF.
Right.
It's just not very catchy at all, is it?
I think it should be called Hop Off. Hands Off Poor Old Frog Friends. Yeah, I like that.
It's catchy, that. Yeah.
Okay. Mm. Cool. That's enough acronym and other business for now. Many thanks to Greg Ruffley, Michael Hann, and Barry Glendinning for joining us today, and producer Ben, and you indeed, the listener. We'll be back with more post-Champions League fun and games on Thursday, so do join us then. Have a super time in the meanwhile. Bye-bye.
The Guardian has partnered with audible.co.uk to offer listeners a free audiobook when you sign up for a 1 month, no commitment trial of the Audible service. Audible has over 50,000 audiobook titles available to download. Go to guardian.co.uk/audible for further details.